Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 15th of February, Anno Domini 2014, or, as we think of it, Cheap Chocolate Day. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues.
You're stuck on the cheap chocolate.
Cheap chocolate and cheap flowers.
And cheap flowers.
What, dead ones?
No, they're back down to the regular price, $12 a dozen for roses instead of $50.
Well, you know, if you go ahead and plan things ahead of time.
Oh, I did. I called a florist.
There was
Monday.
There was a cute comic on one of the blogs I read where a guy said 6 months ago, I called every restaurant in town and made reservations for Valentine's Day. Now I'm auctioning them off.
All right, we'll start with our news story of the week. The proposed merger of Time Warner Cable and Comcast will face intense scrutiny from government agencies, he laughingly said. Congressional lawmakers were not on Capitol Hill Thursday. There's a shock. But they were already talking about the proposed merger of the nation's two biggest cable companies, Time Warner and Comcast. We need to make certain that this proposed acquisition by Comcast would preserve, if not improve, service for existing customers and maintain jobs for those who currently work for both companies, said Representative Paul Tonko, Democrat of New York. The Albany area congressman sits on one of the House committees that is likely to scrutinize the deal. In fact, hearings are expected on both sides of the Capitol, with the chairwoman of the Senate committee of a Senate subcommittee focused on antitrust issues announcing that she plans to hold a hearing soon. Ultimately, however, antitrust regulators at the Justice Department or the Federal Trade Commission and public interest watchdogs at the Federal Communications Commission will decide whether to sign off on the $45 billion merger. Seth Bloom, who once serves as the general counsel of the Senate's antitrust subcommittee, says the fact that Time Warner Cable and Comcast don't compete in any markets could help their cause before the Justice Department. Already, Comcast is vowing to divest 3 million subscribers in an effort to appease regulators. But Bloom warns a fight could erupt at the FCC when regulators question how the acquisition could impact access to content. This whole approval process could take at least 9 months. So you've all got 9 months to find a different supplier for your internet. Meanwhile, in its merger with NBC, Comcast pledged not to discriminate against online providers like Netflix. Comcast also agreed to make its content available to other providers. However, for the second time, NBC has been restricting its live online Olympic coverage to viewers that have to pay TV subscriptions. Viewers who want to tune into the network's 1,000 hours of live streams need to authenticate themselves, as it's being called in industry speak, which means they need to log in with the username and password they use on the TV provider's website. But a number of Comcast customers now notice that despite paying for cable, they still can't get access to the Winter Olympic streams. That's because Comcast is limiting live Olympic streaming to customers who have, at the very least, the company's digital starter package. Customers who only subscribe to the company's basic cable package or the slightly pricier digital economy package don't get access to any live streams from Sochi. So, our question of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis, like us to remind you. How do you feel about the Comcast-Time Warner cable merger? And your choices are great, okay, meh, horribly depressed and angry, and I don't care enough to have an opinion. So far, horribly depressed and angry seems to be winning with 17 votes, 61% of all the votes. And, of course, you can vote at soundbites.org, Bites with a Y. And when you're done with that, I know you will have more to say. So head on down the right-hand column to Fascinating Stuff. The top choice is the forums. And when you go to the forums, you will see a series of possibilities. The second one is the poll discussion. And when you click on that, you will see a list of all of the polls, discussions on all the polls. And the top one is 15 Feb 14. How do you feel about the Comcast Time Warner merger? And it's clear from at least the first couple of comments that you people take these polls way more seriously than I do. They're saying, well, I feel, one of the choices. Oh, I feel angry, but I'm not depressed about it, so I couldn't vote for that. What? Okay, I get it. Anyway, then you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, we had a very nice discussion last Wednesday at the Apple Cider meeting with Phil Dampier of StopTheCap.com about industry and what Time Warner has promised to increase services this year and make internet faster and better DVRs. And then the news broke about 10:30 after the meeting that Comcast put this bid in. And so, you know, Phil says, all right, just forget everything I said the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
And he's got an interesting article on Stop to Cap this morning. In most cities, Comcast services cost more than Time Warner does here in Rochester. So he's anticipating our bills are going to go up, but we may get the bigger DVRs that Comcast is using. But that's what Time Warner already said they're gonna start rolling out in New York and L.A. first, six-channel DVR with a terabyte hard drive. So that's what more and more people are watching on DVR instead of watching live television. But it's going to be interesting to see if the regulators let it go through, because it's going to give the combined Comcast Time Warner company such a huge market. And what's actually interesting is there used to be a law that limited a cable company to 30% market share until Comcast got to 30% and lobbied right. successfully to have that law repealed.
Right.
So now it's Comcast will now cover 43 of the top 50 metropolitan markets in the country, and just from that alone, that's too big a monopoly, I would think, for the regulators to let it go through.
Well,
so it depends on whose lobbyists.
It's not about us. It's all
right. Yes,
it's all about
whose lobbyists are stronger.
That's right. The big thing, of course, is for many of us. The big thing is Comcast is toying with data caps.
And they have them in a lot of other cities.
Yeah. And so that means you want to watch X number of movies a month. By the time you're a third of the way through the month, you're done with your cap for the entire month. And you have to go buy more data if you want to watch more stuff. The idea behind that, of course, is because Comcast also owns so much content, they want you watching
right.
their shows rather than getting your shows somewhere else.
Right. Comcast owns NBC and CNBC, which broke the news and never mentioned that they were owned by Comcast. So
yeah,
that upset
well,
a lot of people.
That's back in the day when, you know, news readers were actually journalists. They would announce stuff like that. Now they don't.
And Time Warner owns so many movie companies, you know, Warner Brothers Studios. And then new CEO, Rob Marcus at Time Warner, he's been on the job for 44 days. He started January 1st. He's going to walk away with a $56 million severance package.
Nice.
For 44 days of work.
How much?
$56 million.
A little over $1 million a day. That's not bad. I mean, if you're going to, you know, if you got to make some money, that's the kind of money to make, really. Get right down to it.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me. All right, before I depress myself any further, we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Hi, Brian, what's up?
Not bad, not much, guys. How are you?
Peachy, what can we do for you?
LibreOffice.
Yeah.
Love it.
Good.
Problem.
Yeah.
We have two machines, basically the same, both desktops, LibreOffice on both. One works like a charm. The other one works fine in the database or in spreadsheet and word processor. Trying to use the database, now it says, no connection for Java. So I made sure my Java was updated all the way. I deleted the old LibreOffice and installed 4.02 or whatever it is, brand new, and I still get the same thing. No installation could be made because a connection to Java couldn't be found. And I cannot figure out how to find Java.
There's a Java control panel where you have to enable Java. What operating system are you running?
Windows 7.
Did they add the Java disable feature? I think Windows 8 and the Mac OS has a feature that if you don't use Java for a while, it will disable it to stop the bad Java programs
That's
from getting in. So, yeah, somewhere in the computer is the Java control panel. Maybe even in the control panels folder, but that would be too easy.
Yeah, wouldn't it be, though?
Yeah, to make sure that Java
and
is enabled.
I was looking at it before, and I didn't make any... I'm not very good at this. So once if I go there, what do I look for?
There should be an enable or disable button.
That should be in the control panel.
Yeah, there was just a 51 update in the last couple of days or so.
I just updated it last night.
Yeah, you should be able to find it in the control panel.
Okay.
And or it could be down in the lower right corner.
No, it's not. I'm just looking there.
Yeah, and you opened them all up with the little arrow.
Yeah. I'll go look in Java and see what I can find.
Okay. You said this is only in the database function?
Yeah.
I'm finding a couple of things about that in the LibreOffice forums. Let me see if anyone has an answer. A lot of questions, but see if there's an answer.
Well, here's the other thing you can do. In pretty much any of the things, any of the pieces, word processing, spreadsheet, whatever, I believe it's under Tools Options. You'll see a whole set of things down the side, on the left side, LibreOffice, language settings, all that. Under LibreOffice, you should see Java. And when you click on that...
We got LibreOffice Base, LibreOffice, I'll go up to that one.
No, yeah, just LibreOffice, open that up.
No Java.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it under LibreOffice Base?
Under Office Base, you've got connections and databases.
Does it need to have MySQL loaded, too?
No.
That's what it would connect to.
It'll use SQLite, which is built in. But generally,
Or uninstalled.
Well, more likely that the Java runtime environment is in there. But on mine, it's under LibreOffice. You might find it somewhere else, because I'm using Linux.
Yeah.
But if you find Java...
Yeah, I'm in Java control panel right now.
Oh yeah, no, okay, that's separate. Is it turned on?
That's what I'm looking for. In general. Network settings, what am I looking for?
There should be, I would guess, on the first screen like an enable or disable.
That's the general tab.
Yeah.
It has the version about network settings and then settings and view. For temporary internet files.
Yes, try settings.
Use browser settings, use proxy server, use automatic proxy configuration, direct connection.
Okay, it is in that. In LibreOffice itself.
Yeah.
Under tools.
Options,
You've opened up LibreOffice and you don't see Java.
Correct.
Look in all the other sections. Probably wouldn't be in load, save, or language settings, but...
Yeah. Charts, default colors, no. Internet, proxy, browser plugins, media, wiki.
Nothing. Well, that's interesting.
I can't find Java.
Yeah, I don't have an...
Which probably is the problem.
Try a full uninstall and reinstall?
That's what I did just before I called. I got the latest version. Connections pooling enabled. And the list of drivers there for connections. None of them mention Java directly. It's got JDBCD. It sounds like an IE chart.
That's the Java database connector.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it says is missing, right?
Yes.
Well, if that says yes, then that should be there.
It should be there. Well, that's what I thought.
I don't know. I'm going to have to come over and see it. You're going to have to buy me a beer.
Okay. I'll give you a call later.
Yeah. I can't. This is one of those things. I got to see it somewhere.
Do other Java apps work?
Yeah.
So it's something specifically in base that doesn't see Java.
It's just the DBase.
Firewall?
I don't know.
But it's not going out over the internet, so the firewall shouldn't care.
Well, that would make sense to me.
Yeah, it does. It
antivirus. Some antiviruses block Java because of all the Java viruses. Temporarily disable and see if that does anything.
Yeah, I'll just open up a Word file, a processing file. No problem.
I don't know. Like I said, you're going to have to buy me a beer.
Okay, fine.
Sorry.
No problem. I know where to find you.
Yes, you do. All right, thanks. That's the problem. At some point, you get to the point where you can't. You have to sit in front of the machine.
Yeah.
You can't see it without that.
And as soon as you look at the screen, it's going to be, oh, there it is, and you'll be done in 5 seconds.
Yeah, always. Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Ray from Webster on the line. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Hey, I just want to thank you guys. Last week, I was telling you that my iMac's menu bar was black.
Yeah.
And you suggested that I reseat the memory cards.
Yeah.
And I did that, and it worked absolutely perfectly. So I just want to give you positive feedback that, in spite of what other people may say, you guys are right on.
Something we suggested actually worked. Wow.
I have nothing to say.
See, we all know that the goal of any tech support person is to get you off the phone. It doesn't matter if they answer the question or not. It's to get you off the phone.
All right, we got more. We still have plenty of room on the wall. I'll write that down that we got at least that one.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Right. And, I just sincerely thank you guys.
It's our pleasure, believe me. Okay, we can go home now.
Like they say, even a squirrel finds a nut once in a while.
Exactly.
Gets lucky.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks. Wow. So that's lovely. That's a nice thing. Years of experience, we got to get one right once in a while. I don't know how that happens, but it happened this time.
Well, and then that brought up the story about the Apple II, where dropping it would reseat
the Apple
pins.
III.
And the Apple III, dropping it a few inches on the desk would reseat the pins.
Yep. Back in the day, the pins used to walk, and we still see it less often, obviously, but we still see it. And so those of us old enough to remember, if we remember.
Yes,
because we are getting that old.
Yeah, I got CRS anyways.
Right.
But remember the days, when we had to put, even my mic's starting to act up, to put the 16 little pins for each chip into the sockets, mm-hmm. hoping one of them doesn't bend underneath because you couldn't always see it. That used to be a big pain in the butt.
Yep, I absolutely remember that. In fact, the very first time I did it, I was so nervous I was sweating. And C.R. Myers, who was working with me at the time, turned to me and said, "Why are you so nervous?" I said, "What if I bend one? These are very expensive chips." He said, "What do you care? They're not you didn't pay for it."
that's an interesting attitude, yeah.
And
yeah,
I
really.
Thought, well, he didn't mean that I should break them and bend them and hit them with a hammer. But he just thought, don't stress it, because that'll make you do worse.
Yeah. Mine was
He was right.
Mine was on a PC Junior.
I loved the PC Junior.
And I had
were in charge of the Junior subgroup at the time.
And you pulled out the memory card, because I got the memory card, and I could put a whopping 256K on that thing. And I got all the chips. And matter of fact, Lori was on her way out to go to England. And I had the thing spread all over the table. And she goes, You just got that computer. What are you doing? Upgrading it.
Well, that's what we always do. The first thing you got a computer.
She learned that over time.
Look at the inside.
So I took it. Took the memory board out, and added another 256K. But like you say, get each one of those in there. I make sure I take my time. All 16 pins were locked into their little socket, and then gently push it down. It took me quite a while.
To get them down. 100 years ago on my Mac, my original Mac, we moved it from 128K to 2 meg. 128 meg to 2 gig.
Yeah.
128 meg to 2 gig.
Whoa.
And,
no, you were right the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you said it.
You're right, 128K. Yeah, I can't even think of that nowadays. 128K.
I got that on my watch.
Exactly.
That's
not a full. And so we did that. Gabe Hamidian and I did that. And we were very careful. It was the first one he'd done. Certainly was my computer. I was very nervous. And we did it and turned it on. And for what seemed like 5 minutes, nothing happened. We looked at each other. Eyes got real big. And then all went bing. It was counting up. It was doing the memory task, which takes a heck of a lot longer on 4 times the memory.
Yep.
How about my first Mac
eight
from
times
Gabe?
The memory.
Yeah, I bought my first Mac from Gabe, too.
Yeah.
It was an upgraded 128, so maybe it was yours.
Maybe it was mine. No, my godson got mine.
Yeah. But we had a customer this week had 12 gigs of RAM. He went from 4 gigs to 12 gigs in his Mac. And it takes about 10 seconds between the time you push the button until you get the chime. Because that's when it does the power on self-test.
Yep.
And the chime means it finished the test and everything passed. The chime doesn't mean it turned on. It means everything passed.
Right.
So that 10 seconds seems like forever when you push the button. Usually when I put the computer back together, you push the button and nothing happens. There's that moment of panic, what I do wrong, and then it's, I forgot to plug the power cord in.
Right.
At the other end.
Yeah, I just upgraded, well, I built another laptop for Kathy and took it from 2 gig up to 4. And like you say, it takes an extra second. So you go, oh! I'm getting a blue, dark, black screen. No, give a second. And boom, it came up. It's just a matter of, you know, it taking.
We didn't really think about it taking 8 times as long.
Yeah.
You know, and it went on for seemingly forever.
Yeah. Like I said right along, we've gotten so used to instant gratification.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen fast enough. But yet, if you go back to a client that's still doing dial-up.
Oh, my heavens.
Oh, that takes you back to reality, and it's like, oh, all I'm missing is the old coupler that I put the phone into.
I don't even know.
And hear those tones and the hashing back and forth as it was trying to do the handshaking.
But they still use those tones on movies and TV shows to mimic a computer connecting up.
Yeah.
But they haven't made those tones in 10 years.
That's actually
common, yeah.
That's actually my ringtone.
You would.
It
You're
is.
Sick. You're sick like that.
It is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Joel, patiently waiting in Pittsford, New York. What's up, Joel?
Well, you guys are bringing back memories of the trepidation of opening up my first 512K Mac with that long Torx driver.
Yep.
It was kind of scary. But my question is, how does one get hooked up with the Google Hangouts for sound bites?
Well, you should just be able to find them on the Hangouts page.
I'm at that page.
It might have
scrolling to buy.
Yeah.
I'm at the Hangout page and I can see it, but then again, it's my Hangout, so I would see it. Open to the public. It should be.
What browser?
It is open to the public.
What browser are you using?
I'm using Chrome.
Chrome, yeah. That's what Safari that just told me I couldn't use it.
Wow. No, you should be able to just see it. If you go to Hangouts, hold on.
Is there a search? Search for it's under
SB140215. SB for sound bites, 14 for the year, 02 the month, 15 the day.
All right. So it's a different URL every week, so we can't really.
Well, it would be anyway.
Link it. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're kind of overwriting your last thing there. But if you go to Hangouts, I'm doing that right now, so please forgive me. Rochester Google's March 6th. Let's not forget that.
upcoming events. There's sound bites. Hangouts. There it is. If I click on Hangouts, it takes forever to load. And there I am. On the left, I'm seeing it as the very first thing.
You're logged in. You're logged into your
Because you're a member, I believe. But I'm at the Hangouts page, and if I search for sound bites.
Do you have a Google account, and are you logged into it?
I have a Google account, and I'm right. logged in.
It's not – what you should be looking for is SB140215.
And that would be the
– the title of the Hangout.
The date.
Yeah, it would be the date. The year is 14.
Okay, we'll give that a try.
Yeah. Alternately, I'm Nick Francesco on Google+. Look at my thing. You should see me in a Hangout there. Alternately, beyond that, send me a message, and I'll add you to my list that I go and remind them of.
Okay. And what address should I send that message to?
Well, no, go right. You can go right to my page. Or you can just send it to nick@asknick.com.
You know what? One other thing you should plug, though, Nick.
Yeah.
Is the reminder for folks to get the reminder before Soundbites even starts.
That's absolutely true. We're partnered with the charming and lovely folks at myminders.com. Well, I'm sorry. We weren't done with you, were we?
Yeah. Well, I got you with the SB0, you know, whatever.
Oh, good.
All right, good.
We're good. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. We've partnered with the folks at MyMinders to offer a reminder of the show every week. If you send a text to 740-I-REMIND, that's 740-473-6463, and all you have to do is type join space SBytes, SBYTES. You'll get an answer back saying that you've become a member, and then every Saturday at about 15:45, you'll get a reminder to listen to Sound Bites every week on your cell phone. So it's, you know, standard rates apply, blah, 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 blah. You can stop at any time if you text to that message the word help. You'll get back a whole list of things you can do. So go ahead and give that a shot if you want to and get that reminder. It was stopped working for a week or two because somehow the server locked up. I don't know what that was, but a reboot fixed that. A day or two. Did I say a week or two? Yeah, because over a week nobody noticed it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Until that Saturday when I didn't get the message.
It was but it was off for a bit and it's back on again. So my Minders is there. And give that a shot, and let me know what you think, one way or the other. It's a fun little thing, and it's easy, it's fast, and it gives you the reminder every week, which I personally like. Nothing wrong with that. All right.
Although a 15-minute warning for you is about an hour too late.
For me, it is. Yes, yes. The theory, yes,
just a little.
The theory is you're just sitting there watching, sitting around your house, and somebody says, it's sound bites in 15 minutes. Gives you plenty of time to go get a drink and make popcorn and
sit around the radio with all your friends.
Sit around the radio with all your friends.
When the radio was a giant piece of living room furniture.
That's right. You'd gather with your if you were watching, listening to the Lone Ranger, you'd have your cap gun and your hat and your...
Amos and Andy, Mom, and Pa, Kettle.
Exactly. I've got thousands
Green
and
Hornet.
Thousands and thousands of hours
so cuddle
of
your,
old-time radio.
Cuddle your smartphone and listen to us.
Yeah. And we're off. We're going to take a quick break as the Bulls are running. Boy, is the Bull running today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And this is an interesting story. I'm not sure what to make of it. Of Microsoft's many challenges in mobile, none loom larger than the app deficit. It only takes a popular new title like Flappy Bird. Flappy Bird, we hardly knew you. To highlight what the company is missing out on. Windows 8 apps are also few and far between, and Microsoft is stuck in a position where it's struggling to generate developer interest in its latest style of apps across phones and tablets. Some argue Microsoft should dump Windows Phone and create its own forked version of Android, not unlike what Amazon has done with its Kindle Fire apps, while others claim that's an unreasonably difficult task. These are people who are not programmers. With a new mobile and cloud-focused CEO in place, Nokia's decision to build an Android phone, and rumors of Android apps coming to Windows, could we finally see Microsoft experimenting with Google's forbidden fruit? Sources familiar with Microsoft's plan say the company is seriously considering allowing Android apps to run on both Windows and Windows Phone. While planning is ongoing, and it's still early, some inside Microsoft apparently favor the idea of simply enabling Android apps inside its Windows and Windows Phone stores, while others believe it could lead to the death of the Windows platform altogether. The mixed and strong feelings internally highlight that Microsoft will need to be careful with any radical move. Android is the mobile equivalent of Windows on desktop PCs. It's everywhere. That growth shows no signs of stopping, and it represents a huge blockade for Microsoft's mobile efforts across multiple market segments. iOS might still dominate developer interest for new apps, but Android has successfully bridged the gap on the smartphone side, something Windows Phone is still far from achieving. Android apps usually debut alongside their iOS equivalents, or shortly afterwards, and developers are clearly investing time and money on both platforms. For Microsoft, meanwhile, it's a challenge of growing Windows Phone shipments and apps. Running Android apps on Windows Phone and Windows would serve as a Band-Aid. Where might Microsoft go for assistance? Well, Android on Windows is a muddled mess right now, but Intel and software firm BlueStacks might be good places to start. Intel is pushing its own dual OS concept to let PC makers create hardware that runs both Android and Windows. Meanwhile, AMD has sided with BlueStacks, a company that Intel has even invested in itself, to allow users to run Android apps inside Windows with the help of an ARM processor embedded in some of its chips. BlueStacks has been enabling Android apps to run on its Windows for a few years now, and it has signed deals with Lenovo and Asus to ship software on their PCs. The Android decision will ultimately fall on the shoulders of brand new Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. So, our question to you, if Windows phones had Android apps, would you buy them? How about their desktops? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I find the idea very interesting, actually, because being able to run Android, there are, a couple of hundred gazillion Android apps. And there are, six, I think, Windows apps? So the ability to run the Windows apps on the Android apps on a Windows phone means that Windows has a better shot at the market. And you're absolutely, and the news article, absolutely right. When something that is so ridiculously hot, like Flappy Birds, my high score, by the way, 3.
All right, I gotta act.
It doesn't matter anymore because it's gone.
It's gone.
There's a lot of really crappy clones.
Really crappy
what
clones.
What was it?
It was a game. It was a stupid little game.
Well, I gather that, but
you kept tapping the screen to make the bird stay flapping its wings. It would go up and down. Then you had to get it through these narrow things that looked exactly like the pipes on Mario.
Okay.
Mario World. It was just, it's really hard to do. My high score is 3.
Reports that the guy was making $50,000 a day in advertising revenue. And he claims, the news reports are claiming that he said he just got overwhelmed with the media and the attention and pulled it.
Yeah.
Change your phone number. Stop answering the phone.
Yeah.
But, there's lots
For $50,000 a day, I could get entirely overwhelmed and still deal with it.
Yeah. It was just some guy, as Zephyr Bibelrex would say. But, it's one of those where you a developer wants to make a program, they have to decide what platform to make it for. So it may not necessarily be hard to make it for all the platforms. It's just time-consuming, and it can be expensive. So you look at iOS and Android, because those are the two biggest. Then you get around to maybe, you know, Windows Phone, but you know, Windows Phone market share is so low. Is that worth your time and money?
Right.
And then you've got Mac and Windows and Linux desktop OSs.
Right.
And then you've got Xbox and PlayStation. So you got to make eight different versions of the same program if you want to get everybody.
And the other part of the problem, of course, is to get something into the Apple Store, you have to become a developer. You have to get some fairly good chops on some fairly interesting products.
Yeah.
And then you wait to see if it's even approved to go into the store. And it might not be. Whereas for Android, you just have to make it and throw it up there.
Right.
So at any rate, the Flappy Bird is now gone, but there's all kinds of clones which are not really quite the same.
I've seen on eBay selling. So if you still have the program, it still works fine. You just can't download it again.
Right.
Okay.
Or download it new. So there have been people that are in frustration were destroying their iPhones. Well, idiots. And there are other people, I don't know whether they're smart or stupid, are selling their iPhones on eBay, pre-installed with Flappy Birds for thousands and thousands of dollars. Idiots.
Duh.
Or the idiot who pays for it.
Yeah, there's the idiot.
Yeah.
Right. You can also, if you really want to know what I'm talking about, and you were one of the many, many, many people who did not download Flappy Bird and thus no longer can, you can, if you want, find Flappy Bird online.
The real Flappy Bird?
It's
a hacked version.
It's awfully close.
Okay.
It's awfully close. It's an HTML5 version of the game, so you need a decent new browser. It seems to work.
It's one of those games that you can learn how to play in a second, and then it gets frustrating and addictive.
Right.
And actually, that was one of his criticisms to the author, one of his criticisms. In the App Store, under the reviews and ratings, he was getting 5-star reviews, and the text was always, don't download this, you'll never get another bit of work done again.
Well, I still am hooked on Candy Crunch.
Then don't play Flappy Birds. No, I'm serious. Don't do it.
Because I think I'm up to, 170? I think I'm up to 173, 74. Of course, Kathy, you know, I don't understand her philosophy. She went back and has to get 3 stars on every one.
Yeah.
I'm glad just to get past some of these darn levels.
Yeah.
But I can see where this obsession with folks, now with like her, she's got to go back and get 3 stars with every one.
Yep.
I'm just happy to blow through it, get past that one, because the meter comes up every so often. After I've played it so many times, they'll say what you think of it. I go, boring, boring. It seems to work, though, because it's like maybe 3 or 4 times after that, all of a sudden it moves me on to the next level.
Zero.
Yeah. Boom. I get 1 star, and I'm boom, boogieing on through.
I tell you, I hit 3. I hit 3 on Flappy Bird. That's pretty good. 0 again.
0.
All right. Do we have time? Poor Mark has been waiting patiently. Do we have time for Mark? We can at least get your question in. Mark, what's up? Mark from Greece, New York.
Going back to the Time Warner merger, if I could, for just a
second. Yeah, of course.
this thing scares the daylights out of me. From what I'm reading, a lot of people are saying, you know, there's no advantage to us as a consumer, which there hasn't been anyways, but they're saying it's going to drive up the Internet prices more than it is the TV programming.
Yep.
And the only advantage there is, and it's not for us, it's basically for Comcast.
Of course.
They'll have more clout negotiating deals because if someone doesn't want to, you know, do a good deal with them for programming, what are they going to do? Block them out? They're going to be the biggest thing in the country.
Yeah. Well, and that's the whole mess with net neutrality is that we as users want net neutrality. We don't want companies like Comcast saying or NBC saying you can't watch NBC Olympics unless you sign into your Comcast account. And so we're afraid that this is going to be horrible for consumers. And just it'll make the shareholders happy because the stock prices are going up.
Yeah, it's never been about the consumers. No, no, you know, we don't have lobbyists. It's never about us.
Never, never. And it seems like the more the government tries to get involved, the worse it gets because, you know, they had that whole Cable Act of 1992 with the no compete
right.
Thing. And,
yeah,
and
that's
basically
done.
What I'm reading is that who wants to come into a market and build an infrastructure to compete with a cable company that's been there, and then one of them is going to suffer and go away.
Yep. Well, we at least have two choices. Many of us in the Rochester area have at least two choices. We have Time Warner, soon to be Comcast, and we have Frontier. We also have people like Greenlight who are slowly developing fiber.
And that's the problem. They have to run all new wire.
Right.
So anyone, right. Right, and Time Warner is quick to point out there's no monopoly. Anyone can run a cable system if they want. But how many billions of dollars are you going to spend to put in the new wire?
Right.
Exactly.
And then it has to do with rights of way and everything else. So, you know, clearly it is not in Time Warner's or Frontier's best interest to help their competition. And I do get that. I absolutely do get that. But
there's word about that Dish Network and DirecTV want to combine into one company.
Right.
And they don't even dare try to do it because they're afraid it's going to get blocked because they're the only choice to the rural areas of the country that don't have cable, and that would be a monopoly and no choice thing.
Well, it's interesting in satellite radio, Sirius and XM were allowed to merge, even though they were the only companies there were, and now there's no competition.
Right.
So it depends on who's in charge of the FCC and how strong each side's lobbyists are.
This to me is a very scary scenario. I don't like it whatsoever.
Yep.
I have enough problems with Time Warner trying to, you know, get pricing and, you know, try to keep things reasonable. And there's my second highest bill next to my gas and electric.
Yep.
It's
yep.
ridiculous. It really is.
Well, and if Time Warner and Comcast merge, the likelihood of you being able to cut the cord will be very low because if they institute caps and limit the amount of data you can use a month, the limits will be very high if you don't watch movies and don't watch television shows online, but very low if you do.
I have a brother in San Francisco that has Comcast. He's got a cap, but they've got him capped at 250 gig a month.
Again, it depends on what you do.
And that's what the cable companies say. The average user is never going to come close to that.
Right.
But a lot of us do watch
streaming
videos.
A lot of streaming. And
right, yeah. If you stream on Netflix a lot, you know, you download a Linux distro. An iOS update. You know, the last macOS update was... the upgrade was 6 gigs, and the update was 200 megs. Windows updates all the time. You can run up that data very fast.
Particularly if you've got three or four people in the household.
Very true.
So, it's not about you. I hate to say that, but it's true. All right, sorry, we're done for this hour. We're going to take a slightly longer hiatus here, and then we'll be back with a whole nother hour of this nonsense, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You can see us on Ustream. You can join us in the Hangout. You can join us in the IRC chat. You can listen on the live stream on Jazz 90.901.org. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of this week's Sound Bites. It is the 15th of February, Anno Domini 2014, or as we like to think of it, Cheap Chocolate Day.
And Cheap Flower Day.
And Cheap Flower Day. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Anthony did in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Anthony. What's up?
Hi, guys. Back to the Time Warner merger thing.
Yeah.
People like me who use Wi-Fi, free spots, like, you know, going to the bookstore, coffee shop, and stuff like that, you think it's going to harm businesses and what they offer for users?
It could, because if that company is buying their internet service from somebody, and if that happens to be Time Warner, who becomes Comcast, who gets a cap, the business may stop offering free Wi-Fi because they have to pay now for everyone's internet usage.
I mean, the big box stores, like I love to go to, like, you know, Barnes and Nobles, and, you know, or and just, like, you know, sit back and have a cup of coffee and.
Yeah, no, probably, I get that.
Yeah, probably.
It's free, and it's like on a day today. It's great. You get out, you meet people, and it's you get good. I'm sorry, good conversation. But I see if that dissipates, it's going to take people away from businesses.
Yep. And so what's going to happen is one of a couple of things: either they will stop offering it and lose a certain amount of business, or they will have to pay much more for their internet access every month, and at some point they will pass those costs on to you.
Yeah, it was just a thought.
Yeah, I'd almost think that the really big stores, you know, like the Barnes & Noble and whatnot, probably won't change because their internet service is just lost in their bills. But the smaller coffee shops, independent shops, maybe, and I don't know. Does a Star Wars, Starbucks store independently franchised, or is that a corporate? So it's up to each franchisee.
Yeah, it depends
to decide how, if they want to still offer that free service.
Right.
Yeah,
that's the way they would have to go.
They might raise the price for their products in order to continue offering free Wi-Fi for customers.
Or can they write it off as advertising?
Yeah, but you still have to pay for it. You pay for it up front and then write it off in the end. So it's
double-edged sword.
Yeah. And that's the big problem. You know, what might raise the prices?
That's right. Well, and it's going to go up. I think we know that. I'm just not very patiently waiting for
Files?
Greenlight to come to my neighborhood. They keep doing all the neighborhoods nearby. I don't know what their story is, Mark.
Robert, where are you calling?
But they'll get to me at some point, I'm sure. I'm just impatient. But yeah, the landscape is changing. You know, what are you going to do? The landscape is changing, and we're all finding that we have to deal with what we have to deal with, and at some point we'll stop remembering how it used to be, and then they will win.
All right, that's about 3 months down the road.
Yeah, right. Our next caller is Robert from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Robert. What's up?
Good afternoon. I'm on the way to the market to buy some coffee from a beautiful lady.
That's exactly right.
I have a question in the meantime. I'm going to take your advice on a Chromebook, and I know Asus came out with a touchscreen, and I was wondering what you thought of that one.
I have not had a chance to play with it. The idea of a touchscreen gives you the best of both worlds. It still has a keyboard for those times you really want to type,
And, of course, it has the touchscreen for Flappy Bird in HTML5. So if you can afford that and you like the screen size, I would say go for it. My recommendation is get the one with 4 gig if you can.
Right.
Having a touchscreen, even if you only use it rarely, is a great choice as time comes on. It's only about $300, so it's not terribly different in price from all the others. I don't remember what the screen size is. Can you...
I think it's 11.6.
Yeah, 11.6.
If you're now, I had to give up the 11-inch screen. I just can't really see
right.
it that well.
Well, if you went up to 14, which one would you
the HP
choice?
The HP is phenomenal. The HP is phenomenal, but 14 is big. Toshiba is also coming out with a 13-inch screen, which is about the size of the MacBooks and that stuff. So that's clearly a size that people like.
Okay, well, very good. Well, I appreciate that very much. Thank you, fellas.
Good luck. And have a second cup of coffee on me. Pay for it, but you have it. My wife doesn't let me buy people coffee anymore because I would buy everybody coffee.
True.
Yep.
So, you know, the people who now they go to the Flower City Coffee Company at the public market and say, you know, Nick said to buy me a cup of coffee. She just laughs.
She sits there and say,
yeah, that'll happen.
When what freezes over?
Exactly. She says, Nick who? That's.
I used to know somebody by that name.
Not it looks anymore. Like it's. So HP's got two Chromebooks. There's the Chromebook 14 and there's the Pavilion Chromebook. Let me see if that's the 13-inch.
Yeah, there's...
No, that's also 14.
Yeah,
so what's the difference between the Chromebook 14 and the Pavilion Chromebook 14?
I believe it's the processor. The Haswell processor is in the HP Chromebook 14. I don't know what's in the Pavilion, but I think it's an older model and therefore might not have the Haswell.
Celeron.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, could, well.
It still could be a Haswell Celeron.
Could be
Celeron. Doesn't
yeah,
say.
Could be. Doesn't say. Believe me, if it doesn't say, it isn't.
Yeah.
That Haswell has a lot more battery life. I tend to carry mine around all day long, and I truly do get about 9 hours out of it. Usually about 8 hours of actual work, and then, you know, going from one meeting to another, I don't even bother to turn it off anymore. So I get about 7 hours of work and a couple hours of standby time. It's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty cool.
It's got a 200-nit display.
Yes.
We'll have to learn new words now. Haswell. Now, Intel's got to be really happy that people are marketing that Haswell name, although that's probably part of the Intel Inside. We pay you to put the warning label on the computer.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I forget whose brand it was, but somebody had a computer that instead of all the zillions of stickers you got on all the front and back and top and bottom, it had a little slide-out tray that had all of the Windows sticker, the Intel sticker, and the FCC sticker that it needs to have. But it was all on a little slide-out tray that didn't take away from the look of the computer. I thought
oh,
that was kind of neat.
If you want to see something cool, if you've got a modern browser that runs HTML5 well, go to unrealengine.com/HTML5. It takes forever to download the data, but it's the beginning. It's not the game itself. It's just a demo. It's a walk through a virtual world. And the WADS keys walk you around left, right, forward, backward, and the left and right arrow keys move you left and right, and you can walk around this place. And on my Chromebook, I was getting 57 frames a second.
Wow.
Pretty amazing. Pretty cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dick from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's up?
Hi, guys. Upstairs, I've got my modem coming in, router, and a desktop XP. And down here in the TV room, I connect to it with my laptop, which is Windows 7. Any idea why both of them, like I could be downstairs here playing around or upstairs, and either of them will freeze just because it wants to? I mean, any idea what I might be able to do to keep those things from freezing up on me? Then I have to turn it off and start over again.
Is it the whole computer freezing or just a web page or a video stream?
the whole computer, the whole screen. I move my cursor around and it does nothing. I hit Alt-Delete, those three things, and...
Does this only happen when you're in a browser, or does it happen anytime?
Oh, I see. I'm in a browser. Yes, I'm looking around stuff.
So are you thinking it's your internet connection, or are you thinking... It's got to be, because, I mean, it's on two different machines, right?
Yes.
And it happens at the same time on both machines?
Wherever I am, occasionally, will freeze. So... Is it the modem, you think?
Well, what I guess it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you're downloading, if you're watching a video of some sort, YouTube or Netflix or something along that line, then it is likely that the buffering is catching up. You were watching faster than it was streaming, so it freezes for a minute while the buffer catches up.
I understand that. Yeah, no, again. That is not what I was doing. I'm just browsing. Basically,
so the cursor stops.
Any videos or anything.
Does the clock stop updating the time? That's something.
Well, everything freezes, so nothing is moving at all. The time would not move at all either.
When was the last time you danced the security tango on either of those machines?
Oh, probably longer ago than you'd want me to.
Yeah.
I do it occasionally, but not as often as you're suggesting.
Well,
so.
I'm wondering if you didn't pick something up and spread it to the other machine.
Oh, okay. Okay, I should run the tango on both?
Well, yeah, because it's happening on two separate machines, it doesn't seem to be network-related.
Okay.
And those two machines could be doing entirely different things. My first inclination is to assume you've been infected.
Okay. Thank you. I will run the tango.
All right, there you go.
Okay.
Good luck.
One thing that I've
it's
seen...
It's listed, by the way, on our homepage, if you want to see it.
It is now.
If you go down on the right-hand side to Fascinating Stuff, you'll see a list to the Security Tango. Of course, it's also at securitytango.com.
You know one other thing I couldn't find on the page?
What?
I heard this on the show.
That's everything
that's links.
Here. That's every link on
yeah.
the page.
Everything on the page are the links.
So, for example, we just talked about Comcast. That's the top story.
Yeah, no, I was just looking for previous old ones.
You can find that as well. If you go down to, again, on the right-hand side, you have to get past the fold. You have to scroll down. Under categories of posts, the second choice is links you've heard on the show, and there's 231 of them.
All right, when I saw it last, I couldn't see that.
Yeah, not everything can be at the top, unfortunately. But you can see it there, and it's...
Okay.
And on any...
I trust you.
On any of the posts that are displaying on the front page, it usually says posted by Steve Ray under links you heard on the show. And you can click that links you heard on the show to get all of them.
Right.
And you just keep scrolling down, and then there's a next and a next and a next.
Right.
And the search in the little magnifying glass that's in the upper right-hand corner will let you search for things. I heard about something, you know, what was that thing that we talked about, Time Warner? You can search for Time Warner, and it will find them all.
Right. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Auto-connect to the server at startup. There you go. All right. Now we're good. There we are. Thank you very much. I was just trying to figure out how to... I'm back on the IRC channel. My machine is starting to lag. I may go away again, but I'm on the IRC channel watching this. You should be able to find the... Everybody seems to have trouble with the Hangout. You should just be able to... If you are a member of Google Plus, and all you have to do that is to get a Gmail account, and that will automatically give you a Google Plus account. You go to Google Plus, you find my name just by looking for Nick Francesco in the search. One of the things that Google Plus does well is search, surprisingly. And then you find my page, and one of the things you should see is Nick is in a Hangout. And if it's not full, you should see a blue join, I think it's blue join this Hangout button, and join the Hangout. And once you've done that, there you are. Or, I suppose, you could go to my YouTube channel and just watch it. So that's a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah, the Hangout is a really neat feature for having two-way interaction between people that are talking together. So we're not using it for that purpose, but it's a neat way to have it be able.
Right. And you can have, and because it streams to YouTube, you can have a million people watch it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we have Tony from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Tony. What's up?
Oh, hi. I was wondering about the Frontier package, if you've had any experience with that. I called and talked to them, and they have this mix and match, which is internet, TV, and phone. And their first year is 94.46, and the second year is 124.26. And what I'm paying now for all my services is 152.11. I was just wondering if you know about their service, whether it's reliable. I know they have, I think it's, is it DirecTV?
Right. Yeah, Frontier themselves don't offer television service, so they partner with the satellite company. The biggest thing to look at in the price differences of the bundles is what your internet speed is. So with your current provider, you may be getting, say, 15 megabit. And with this lower price Frontier service, you may be only getting 3 megabit. So that's one of the ways they lower their prices. And then Time Warner offers the same sort of thing, too. They have a $14.99 a month internet service that's 2 megabit. So if you're just very casual web surfing and you're not doing any video streaming, that may be enough. So you can lower your price with your existing provider by either lowering your packages we're hearing some nice stories about threatening to quit and getting a better price out of it. But you have to make sure that you're comparing the same things from both companies.
And if for some reason I wanted to switch from Time Warner because of an issue, would I be okay going with Frontier?
Generally, yeah. Both of the internet providers in town, they're the two big ones, are good. What we often see is people will have an argument with one and want to switch to the other back and forth. There are some technical differences between them. The biggest issue with Frontier's DSL is the distance you are from the phone switch. The farther you are from the phone switch, and you have no idea knowing where your phone switch is, but the farther away you are, the slower your internet service is. And with Time Warner, the more people in your neighborhood that are using the internet, the slower your internet is. So they both have their own technical issues. But in general, they're both about the same. Time Warner does offer faster services. If you're a speed freak or you do stream a lot of movies, then you can get much faster service from Time Warner than Frontier can offer.
Okay. I thank you for that. And by the way, I love your show. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you. We love to hear that.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's interesting and difficult that the companies don't offer the same exact services, so it's very hard to compare prices between the two. You always see this starting at $19.99 a month. Well, I'm paying $29.99 a month from the other guy, but I'm getting mm-hmm. three times faster, so that's a better deal.
Well, that's the thing, though. Some folks have been saying on a particular provider that if they bump it up, they really haven't seen anything when they've downgraded.
Yeah.
You know, because of their usage. Again, it's going to depend on the individual and your usage and what you'll tolerate.
Right.
Yep.
And
yep.
that gets,
right.
you know, a lot of folks say, what do you mean tolerate? Well, some folks are just very impatient and they want everything, 10 seconds yep. previous. Yep, I know.
That's me.
we notice at our office, we're using DSL, and we notice at 2:30 when the kids get home from school, our internet gets a little slower. Because more people start using it, and mm-hmm. there's nothing you can do about that.
Welcome to the world wide
yeah.
wait.
The big issue is if you're on say a 5 megabit line, and you've got a lot of people using it, then it gets slower faster than if you're on a 50 megabit line and a lot of people are using it.
Right. If you're one of those people who's spending an awful lot of time doing things like downloading Linux distributions and updating 15 or 16 or 30 machines or playing the very high-end multiplayer online games and stuff like that, then faster is always better.
Right.
If what you're doing is surfing regular websites, not watching a lot of videos online, email, blah, 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 then the very slower speeds might be okay for you.
Yep.
And the other confusion is that the price the caller just mentioned on the phone is not the prices Frontier has on their website. So you call them on the phone, both companies, you call them on the phone, you're going to get different pricing than on the website, depending on who you happen to get at the other end and what packages they're allowed to offer.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
In fact, again, going back to Stop the Cap, he had a really nice article on how to lower your cable bill using Time Warner customer service through tweeting, their social media service. He was able to drop his bill and increase his services, which is what we all want.
Right.
Well, that gets me. You know, I notice my cable bill each month, you know, or every few months, it seems like they keep creeping it up a couple bucks here and there. And it's for other channels and that type of stuff that I could give a rat's butt about.
But they say bundling those channels together would be cheaper in the long run than you buying just the channels you want. The other thing that we're seeing with, especially with cable, is you are renting your cable router that you used to be included in your package. And so if you've had cable internet for a long time, you probably have a very old router. You can buy your own cable router for about $100 instead of paying the $6 a month rental fee. In fact, that's one of the big criticisms with Comcast, and I think they're pushing $10 a month for their cable modem fee because they can. And it's a way of adding a fee and increasing their revenue without actually raising the rates, so they can say they haven't raised their rates. They just raised the fees.
Right.
So take a look at your detailed bill and see if you're paying a rental fee for your internet modem.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy your own and save some money.
Yep. All righty, there we go. Our next caller, David from Webster, New York. Welcome, David. What's up?
Hi, I've got a PC that's got Vista on it. It's not the newest machine by any means.
We're sorry.
Well, you know, I know how to fix it.
Throw it out.
Throw it out, that's right. And the problem I'm having is every time I boot up, I get a note that says something like msvcr80.dll is missing.
Okay.
I've read a little bit on the internet. I haven't done a whole lot. Obviously people want to sell me utilities that fix this, and you kind of say, is this really what I need? And so I thought, I was riding around the car and I heard you guys today. I thought, hey, these guys will know.
Yeah, you want Windows 7.
Yeah. Well, the biggest question is what that DLL is and why it's missing. Is it missing because there's a problem on the hard drive and it can't read the file? Is it missing because some other program replaced it with something else? Mm-hmm. Or is it missing because malware did something to it?
Well, I know that I have like 6 versions of it in different places on my computer.
Hmm?
So I'm assuming is it possible that something in the registry has gotten screwed up?
Well, yeah. Certainly a possibility. One of the things that uses it is iTunes.
Right.
And iTunes it really doesn't sit well with Vista, I'm afraid.
And there was
most programs didn't sit well. There was an 11. Vista. It's right up there with ME. And now we're going to be adding Windows 8 because they've already announced that Windows 9 is coming, and they can't wait to get that out fast enough.
Right.
There was a bug in the recent iTunes 11.1.4 for Windows that just came out. I remember reading a tech note on it, and that may be what you're getting caught by.
Well, I know I've been notified that there are new versions of iTunes out there, and it won't install because it can't find the right version or it can't locate this or whatever.
Yeah.
Sounds like you need to do a complete uninstall and then reinstall.
Uninstall of iTunes?
Yeah.
Yep.
Use Revo. Revo uninstaller will get rid of that program totally and also out of the registry. Whereas Windows, if you use the uninstaller from Windows, it still leaves remnants in the registry of the old version of iTunes.
Okay.
All right. All right.
So I'll give that a shot. And I know that I did. I tried to go back to an earlier version.
Oh,
you know,
here it is.
I mean, you can go in and you can look back.
Yep.
To create the file the way it was a while back.
Yep.
And that didn't do anything on it.
Yep. Yeah, I just found the tech note, and that MSVCR 80DLL is the iTunes for Windows bug. So I'm going to post the link for that from Apple, and they have basically the answer is uninstall and reinstall.
Yeah.
Okay. I can do that.
Yep.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, one of the things that we joke about is when Steve Jobs first announced iTunes for Windows, he called it the best Windows program ever. And we joked because, you know, we on the Mac side feel that all Windows programs are crappy. but they are finding that Windows programming is pretty tricky.
Yep. Yeah. It's a very delicate thing because, well, a large part of it is that registry business. Every single program hits the registry all the time, and the registry is the single most important part of Windows. And so it's an interesting conundrum that you've got that going on. Our next caller, George, from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
Hi. Actually, I got two items now.
Yeah.
I want to clarify something I heard Steve say just a couple minutes ago.
We've been trying to do that for decades.
Do what?
Clarify anything Steve says.
Oh, well. There's no better time than to start now.
Right. Go ahead.
Good luck with that one.
You fellas have had me pretty well convinced about the difference between DSL and what is sold by Time Warner. But then I thought I heard Steve say that in the early afternoon. I thought he said they were on DSL, but it starts to slow down when the kids get home from school.
Well, they all do. I'm on DSL myself right now, and it gets slower early afternoons. All internet connectivity is shared.
And that Frontier sort of misleadingly says they're not shared. It's all shared. It just depends on where the sharing starts.
Right. The sharing starts in different places. At Time Warner, it's shared at what's called a head end, which connects up to 100 or so houses in your neighborhood.
Okay.
The sharing at Frontier doesn't happen until it gets to the central office, where theoretically it meets a much, much larger pipe. So that the slowdown is less noticeable, theoretically.
I think I had it oversimplified that you had two contrasts. One is you slow down with Time Warner because of the load factor, and with DSL, it depends upon how far away you are from the switch.
And that's the other part of DSL, absolutely.
They both slow down.
They both slow down with load, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Steve, you're looking good.
That's me you're seeing.
Question for you. I experienced this last week, a situation where there was a message on the screen that said, updates are being installed, parentheses 1 of 3. Do not turn off or unplug computer. It will turn off automatically. Now, I allowed it several minutes, and that message was still there. Is there a rule of thumb as to when you need to intervene and get on with life?
Well, two things. First thing to do is if you're on a machine that actually has a light for the hard drive somewhere, watch that and see if every once in a while it doesn't blip for a bit. That will tell you something's working somewhere. You could also bring up the task manager and see if that's working. But much of what's done is done in the background, so it's hard to know when it's done, and that depends entirely on how big the download is, what's being updated, how fast your machine is, what else you're doing. I mean, by the time you're done, you can't generalize.
Right, and usually that message only comes up when you told the computer to shut down, and you missed a little thing that said there's updates waiting to be installed.
I think you're right on that. Now
there's a well on that screen
manager, but that had been closed out before this message appeared.
Right. On that screen, there's a shutdown without installing updates. So if you don't want to wait for it to install the updates, the danger is while it's installing the updates, if you force it to shut down or the power fails and it shuts down abnormally, the update can fail and leave your machine unbootable. So that's why it says to leave it running. The problem is, which is the essence of your question, how long do you wait before you decide it's crashed versus it's just taking a long time?
Well, I think I waited well over 10 minutes, but there's a point where you say, well, this has got to be an erroneous message.
Well, I would wait at least an hour.
Oh, an hour?
Yeah.
Okay, you're in that order.
Especially if there are a lot of updates to install.
Although, remember, it says one of three, so there's not a lot of them. That doesn't say that they're large or small.
Right, you don't know if that one of three is the 200 megabyte, you know, security update.
Okay. Right. I have another question, too. Can I wait till after?
Yeah, hang on the line. Don't hang up. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, George from Greece, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have George from Greece still on the line. What's your question, George?
My question concerns the use of Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah?
And the appearance of the inbox. Going through some difficulties here last week, I'm now using the program, and it seems to have changed the font somewhere along the way. Is there a way to change it?
Is it too small, or?
It seems to be bigger. It's a very block-type appearance. And actually, the bigger concern I have, I seem to be able to use the program, but I have experienced that some things you go through and you kind of do them so quickly, you can make a mistake or do something not quite right, and you don't realize what it was until something appears differently.
Yeah.
I'm interested in whether or not I can go back and change it to something else.
Which version of Outlook are you using?
Oh, I don't know how to answer that. How do I find out?
Go to the Help menu and choose About Outlook, yeah. Is this the font for the message or the font for the interface and the menus?
This is the menu. This lists the various items that have been received. Like who it came from, what it...
That's the message list, yeah.
You call that the message list?
Yep. There's a mail menu, a view.
I looked on a view, I couldn't find anything.
Current view, you go to customize view, and you can change the size of the font in the mail list and in the mail message itself.
Right, so you go into mail, select the view menu, select current view, and click customize.
You said go into mail. No, I'm into view.
All right. In the view menu.
Yes.
Point to current view. Then click customize current view.
I'm not finding current view. I find things like arrange by, navigation plane, auto preview.
You're in view on Outlook.
I'm in Outlook. It says it's the inbox. Microsoft Outlook.
Right. It should be the view menu at the top of the window.
Then it says arrange by.
Up higher. Not in the window, at the very top of the window, the menu, at the very top of the window, where it says file, edit, view.
That's where I am. File, edit, view. I stop on view.
There's a pull down.
And I don't see anything that talks about the current view. Refresh toolbar, status bar. Mm.
Well, that's the instructions for Outlook 2007. Maybe you're running too old a version, or a newer version. So it may be different for whatever version
can
you're
I
running.
With the version 2003.
Oh, you're doing 2003.
Okay.
Well, it's the only
okay, then click on View.
Yes.
Arrange By.
Yes.
Current View. Customize Current View. Then there's an Other Settings button.
There we go, Current View. Okay. We're getting there. Messages with auto preview.
Customize current view.
There we go.
There's an other settings button. And now you have a column font, a row font, auto preview buttons. And you can change any of those fonts until you get the ones you like. Click OK, OK, OK. And you're back out.
Then, I see one there listed as 8-point Tahoma.
There you go.
8-point's pretty small.
Now, the size isn't so much the problem, but I think maybe you've helped me find. So what choices do I have then?
All the ones you see there. And you can pick any. The good thing about it is you can do a little bit of experimenting. Pick a couple, write them down, see whether that looks good. If it doesn't, go back in and change them to something else. You know, you've got a font name, which is the, you know, Tahoma is like Times New Roman. Then you've got a size, 8 points. Maybe you like the font, but you don't like the size, so keep the font, change the size.
I'm keeping up with it, except I don't see the choice of what the characters are.
Where it says 8-point Tahoma, you can change the size and change the font.
So I have to type in the new word. It's not
well, or
it should be a menu.
Do you see a button that says column font?
Yes.
Click it.
Oh, I see.
There you go.
I was going too far to the right.
Yep, yes. There
oh,
you go.
This looks familiar to me.
All right, we really got to move on.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, sometimes the problem is understanding the way Microsoft's programmers have made their decision on the way things should look and where they should be.
Yeah, and there may be a key combination that makes the font bigger and smaller that he accidentally hit. On the Mac, it's Command-Shift-Plus to make everything bigger and Command-Shift-Minus to make everything smaller.
Right.
Which, it's hard to accidentally hit three keys, but I've seen people do it.
All right, our next caller is Chris from Greece, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's up?
Well, I have a cell phone question for you.
Yeah.
I recently purchased an iPhone 5S, and before that I had a Samsung Android, and I'd been having lots and lots of problems with it. That was one reason I switched. When I went to have AT&T switch all the numbers from my Android onto the iPhone, it took three employees over an hour of bumbling around with it, and they finally said they couldn't do it. They said that apparently it was a software glitch in my old Android that would not allow them to transfer all the numbers. So I walk out with 13 years' worth of numbers trapped on an Android. They said that I could go to Best Buy. They might be able to do it for me, but I'd have to pay for it. I really wasn't too pleased with their solution, but what would you guys do or suggest?
Well, the first thing is if you've got them on an Android phone, then you probably also have them in your contacts on in Google Plus, in Gmail.
Okay.
Which means you haven't lost them, so they're still there. That's the good news. I would have to do a bucket load of research to see how to transfer.
You should be able to just log into your Google account on the iPhone, set up Google Mail and Google Contacts on the iPhone, and it should just download them all automatically.
Oh, that's true.
That's assuming your Android phone was set to upload them to Google, which it should have been.
Yeah.
I also just found a link on how to export the data from one and import it to the other. So that's another way. Especially for contacts, you can use the CSV contact text file. You export the contacts from one and import them to the other.
Why didn't they tell me this at the phone store?
Because they're phone people. They're not computer people.
Yeah, there was three of them. Like, how many people does it take?
Well, I suspect that was not something they were originally trained for, and they're not always good outside their training.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can the easiest way to do it, and everything I'm seeing online says the same thing. The easiest way to do it is to set up Google on your phone, and they'll just come down.
Yeah, so it goes up to Google from your phone, from your Android phone, and then down to the new iPhone from Google. So Google is your central server that's synchronizing everything.
Okay.
But you can also do it directly from the phone to your computer, and then from your computer to the new phone.
And Steve's got links to all of that. There'll be stories up on the Soundwave's website.
Okay, sounds good.
Okie doke.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks.
We see that a lot in our store. We get people that have come in who have bought new phones, and the people at the phone store don't know how to transfer all the data. It's a little annoying. Verizon has a backup app that you're supposed to run on your old phone to backup everything to Verizon, and then you run it on your new phone to restore everything from Verizon. We find that doesn't work very well.
Right.
But, yeah, especially from Android to Apple, or even Apple to Android, using Google as your central clearing point usually works best.
Right. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to apologize for not paying more attention in the IRC chat. I was doing a radio show. We will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. But don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. And, of course, thankfully, we have Michael here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.